Don't miss another amazing contest opportunity from ExpressBet with the Gold Cup Challenge on Monday, May 27th. Your $1,500 entry gets you a $1,000 bankroll and $500 going straight to the prize pool with no takeout in that prize pool. Prizes include NHC seats, BCBC seat, Pegasus World Cup betting challenge seat, as well as cash prizes. You can play online at ExpressBet or in person at Santa Anita Park. For more information and details on how to sign up and even qualify this weekend, visit expressbet.com/tournaments. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for Thursday, May 23rd, start of a holiday weekend, dropping a day early because we've got terrific racing from all around the world. Peter Thomas Fornital back with you from Gallery 55 in Brooklyn, and we're going to kick off the show overseas, and not a place overseas we go that much on this show, though. If you're a regular listener to our fantastic Standard Bred content, you'll know a little something about Swedish harness racing. First, we're going to bring in the man who covers Standard Bred racing up and down for us here, along with a great team, including Mike Probosi and Ray Catolo. But right now, we'll bring in Edison Hatter from his own First Over podcast, live from Sweden. Edison, how are things going over there?
Thanks, Pete. Always great to be on with you. And as your next guest we'll introduce here, a great day with him at the Thoroughbred track today, where he's a trainer and got to see him win a race as well.
Fantastic. Congratulations in order to the man we're about to bring in. He's a man. I respect this. People who know me know I have a bunch of different jobs, fingers in a lot of pots in racing. So does the man I'm about to introduce, getting a winner today over there as a trainer on the flat. But you also will know him if you watch the ATG, the Swedish coverage in English on whatever ADW you're on. We welcome for the first time to the In the Money airwaves, Julian McLaren. Julian, how are things, my friend?
Thank you very much, Pete. Thank you very much. And thank you, Edison, for a lovely day at the track. And I'm really happy that I could provide a winner as well from the yard, and that you were there to witness it all as well. So yeah, it's been a good day.
We'll definitely at some point, maybe if we have time, we'll start to get into it here. If not, we'll bring you back, Julian, for a future visit, because I do think people would be interested to know about the Thoroughbred racing that goes on in Sweden. But of course, in terms of the biggest of the big events, there's none bigger than the one coming up this Sunday that folks are going to be paying attention to all around the world. I've heard Elitloppet regarded as the Kentucky Derby of Sweden. Edison, is that a fair metaphor?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I mean, it's such a big event here. It's just fantastic to see such a big crowd at Solvalla on the weekend. And, you know, it's a big weekend. I mean, obviously Sunday's the big day with the big elite race, but a Saturday, a couple of big races to pay attention to, the Sweden Cup, the Harper-Hanover race, and Friday's card to kick it off is great too. So it's three great days of racing here in Stockholm.
Julian, as somebody who lives in both worlds, Thoroughbred and harness over there, how do you describe the relationship between those two things, and how important is Elitloppet nationally?
I mean, to start with, my girlfriend and the mother of my two kids, she's her father is a former harness trainer, Svante Båth. He won the Trotting Derby a couple of years ago. He's won it about three times, I think. And he was second in the Elitloppet with Atraversiamo a couple of years ago. So it's quite optimistic, fantastic that she comes from the harness world and I'm coming from the Thoroughbred world. Yeah, but I mean, regarding Elitloppet, it's just an amazing weekend and to be at Solvalla. And I'm not sure, I mean, yeah, you could maybe say it's like the Kentucky Derby or say Pegasus World Cup or, you know, something like that, because it's so huge. And I mean, wow, the field that we've got this year, it's unbelievable. It's really out of my mind. And I mean, huge respect to Anders Malmroth, the general who organized everything and got all these horses coming for Stockholm and Solvalla.
We're going to drill down into the specifics of the race in a minute. I want to get to the mechanics as well, but the analogies you guys are both making, what I'm thinking and hearing is that Elite Lopet is three things. It sounds like a great sporting event, a great opportunity for a gambling game. It also sounds like a heck of a party. Is that right, Edison?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, it was so great last year. And just for a quick story, you know what amazes me is how smart the Swedish population is about racing. John Campbell came here in 1988, obviously a great American harness driver, with Mack Lobel, won the big race. I've always been told he's a Swedish legend ever since, and I'll never forget last year leaving the track after Elite Lop with this group of college-age kids, clearly a little inebriated, had plenty of drinks throughout the day. They barely knew who they were. But they saw John and said, oh my God, you're John Campbell. We have to get a picture with you. Like, they weren't even born when John was over here. And yet he's that big of a legend in the Swedish sport.
That's great. Let's talk about the mechanics of how it works, because it's certainly different than, I think it's a little different than standardbred racing here, but it's a lot different than flat racing. And of course, here on the Players Pod, our audience, we have some cross-pollination, but there's a lot of flat players who might be betting their first international harness race this weekend, hopefully, if we get them excited enough about it. How does it work in terms of the eliminations and how this field is comprised, Julian?
On Saturday afternoon, late Saturday afternoon, they had the post draw live. We're covering live on television here in Sweden, that was it. Then the two elimination races were out, and we all knew the post number. So, it's just been from the last couple of 3 months. I mean, since we got Ideal de Tillard as the first horse being called out for the Elite Lopet, you know, that was it. Everybody was, you know, this can't get better. This is the best we got, and you know, this will be the best race ever. And then the next horse, you know, was Francesco Setz, and then it was Joviality, and you know, all these names popping up. And I mean, the atmosphere while I'm working at Swedish Horse Racing in Channel 75, all the talk is about the Elite Lopet weekend. It's been for 2 months now.
That's great. Explain, Edison, to some of the flat people who aren't familiar with how these eliminations work, how the field ultimately comes together. Julian did a great job talking about some of the star power, and we're going to want to talk more about those horses before we move too far down the line. But I do want a little bit more on the mechanics, just because, again, it's going to be unfamiliar to some of our audience here.
Yeah, so, I mean, for harness fans that might be listening, it's very similar to the Little Brown Jug and how the old Hamiltonian worked, in that there's eliminations in the final on the same day. So horses are going to race twice in a 2-2.5 hour window. So obviously very different from what our thoroughbreds are capable of. So from each of the eliminations, 2 eliminations, 8 horses each, the top 4 will advance to the final. That'll be the final field of 8 going for the big money and the Elite Lop title. And the posts are done. Actually, there's a couple things different from even our elimination racing in the U.S. First of all, to start, drivers are forced to choose one horse. So they can only drive one horse, even though there's 2 eliminations. Obviously, in the States, usually our top guys will drive a horse in each elimination. And yeah, you know, if they both make the final, then make a decision. And posts are done a little bit differently, too. The Little Brown Jug, the only race we've got left in the States with eliminations in the final on the same day. They, you know, the elimination winners get post 1 and 2, second place gets second, third, and fourth. So it's different here, but it's kind of similar. The elimination winners will pick their post first, then the second place finishers will pick the third place finishers. Obviously, usually they're preferencing the inside post, so it kind of works out the same way as the jug, but I at least like the idea that if for some reason connections really don't want the rail, or even post 2 for some reason, if they want to start from post 4, at least they get the choice to choose what they want for the final.
Very, very interesting and very, very different. Let's get back to some of the stars running here. You started to run them down a little bit, Julian, in the previous answer. But give us a couple of sentence bio, at least of those three big stars you mentioned who are going to be competing.
I mean, first of all, we have to start with Ideal de Tillard. I mean, he won the Prix d'Amérique this in January. He's been dominating the European harness racing for a long time. Last time at Cannes in France, it was 9 recalls before they came before they went running. 9 recalls. Oof. And in one of them, he even got interfered with, and he had a bit of a cut on one of his front legs. it's not a bad big cut, but it was, you know, it was a scrape mark on quite sore to the ligaments. The connections have said everything is all right with Ideal de Tellar. And you know what? In the first elimination race where he is, I don't think he don't mind the number 8 hole, because these French horses, they are so strong. I mean, we saw Etenant a couple of years ago. He won the Elite Loppet. And they said, you know, after the elimination race, when they had, I think they were drawn 7 or whatever. And they said, yeah, but that's okay for us, because we didn't want to be further in anyway in the track. You know, they wanted to be out 6, 7, 8, because they knew they had such a strong horse. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, of course, that's the number one horse, Ideal de Tellar. And Daniel Redén, he got all excited when everybody was talking about Ideal de Tellar being the best horse in the world. So he was like, well, I'm going to show them my horse is the best horse in the world. So that was the engine for him. Because he said beforehand, he said, no, Francesco is not coming for this. We're aiming for something else later on in the season. But, you know, when people start going, oh, Ideal de Tellar, the best horse in the world, he's going for Elite Loppet. Then Daniel Redén was like, well, I'm going to show them who's the best, who's got the best horse in the world. So I'm in as well.
I love it. That's very old school, right? I mean,
This game started.
It didn't all used to be the top people teaming up and buying horses together. It used to be, hey, my horse is faster than yours. I love the idea. Yeah. That idea is alive and well in terms of Elite Love. Tell me a little bit more about the form of Francesco Zet.
I mean, of course, he haven't been out for a long time. Well, he was out running here now on 3rd of May. Before that, he was out on the 16th of August last year. He won, but, you know, there was no point of have a bet on him, because you wouldn't even get your money back, more or less. he was him by himself. He won with six lengths against Hustle Rain, who's also one of the horses in this year's Elite Loppet. Hustle Rain was the pick number six, the horse number 16 joining Elite Loppet. Daniel Redén was really happy with the way Francesco Zet looked. So that's why he said, no, I'm not going to run him anymore. I'm just going to go straight out for elimination race, because he do believe Francesco Zet is from another planet.
I love it. I'm going to make an analogy. Julian, I'm going to take a wild guess. You're not a baseball fan. But when you were describing what happened to Ideal de Tellar in that previous race with all the recalls, I was reminded of a very famous baseball moment, Edison. Curt Schilling in the bloody sock game came to mind. It's just a little scrape. It didn't hurt the performance, but there's something about the courage it takes to perform, even when a little bit nicked up, that I think adds to the drama and ratchets it up a little bit. Are you as taken with this horse? Where do you stand on this clash between the top French horse and the top Swedish horse, Edison?
Well, you know, Pete, I'm sure we're going to plug later places to listen into our stuff, but I admittedly have already taken Francesco Zet as my pick for the race. But obviously, Pete, and again, we'll plug this as well, there's going to be a show later this week where we'll deep dive into this field. But just to give you a quick taste of the field, Francesco Zet, like a 21 race win streak, just unbeatable Swedish horse on home ground, looking for the first home win in front of fans, obviously a couple fanless years since 2019 now. Ideal de Tellar, the Prix de Mourique winner, you know, French juggernaut, should be a fantastic matchup there. But Honeck is the third choice in the futures betting. Last year's champion, Horsey Dream, another strong horse coming from France. Don Finucci Zet is the stablemate to Francesco Zet from Daniel Redén's barn, gets Magnus Yussa, one of the top up-and-coming drivers. That horse has gotten some momentum in the betting and, you know, some possibilities for winning. Go On Boy, dead-heated last year for second in the big race. Onus Prince has all sorts of gate speed. Joviality, of course, we saw here in the United States as a two-year-old. She's since gone home. Caranta sent her home to Sweden. She'll be racing in the big race. She'll be taking on the boys in the race. And there's some longer shots, too. A Fair Day is a great fairy tale story. The regular driver for this horse is a construction worker by day, so small connections.
Amazing.
Getting their chance in the big spotlight. And Benurian Yet, Alessandro Gacciadoro, a great trainer of Italy. And Pete, maybe you've heard of him. A co-owner of this horse is Nikola Jokic, who knows, maybe he wanted to lose Game 7, because I get a suspicion he might be here Sunday.
Will he make it, do you think? Will he come over?
Julian, you might know better than I, but I suspect he will. He was there 2 years ago. He warmed up horses on the track 2 years ago.
He sure did, and I think if he can arrange his flight to fly him to Stockholm just in time for Elite Loppet, he will do so.
That's terrific. I want to talk about the overall gambling environment, because some people who don't follow it might not realize we're talking about some serious pools in terms of liquidity and some great betting opportunities, not just in the big race. Give us a little bit of a rundown on that, Edison.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fantastic pools here in Sweden. The big bets over here are the V-bets. You know, these are like pick sixes, pick sevens, pick eights. These will have millions of U.S. dollars churned in this weekend with huge guaranteed pools. And in general, the win pools are just massive here in Sweden. So, you know, we say all the time we're looking for, you know, big pools to bet into, big betting opportunities. This is a card that could do equivalence to basically Preakness Day. I mean, we're talking huge pools.
That's fantastic. Gambling wise, you know, as a trainer, Julian, I don't know how much you get involved on the betting side of things, but obviously as an analyst, you talk about this stuff. Is there one particular opportunity on the day that stands out to you above the others?
I mean, when it comes to pick a horse for the day, I might say that I do think that Anek will win the second elimination race. He doesn't have a good form at all, but he loves Solvalla. He loves the mile distance. I mean, last year he won the Elite Loppet last year from gate to wire. He's a bullet out behind the car, and I mean, last year they couldn't even catch him. They never came close to him, and he was flying around at Solvalla. So yeah, for the V75 bettors, I mean, he's a main player in my opinion when it comes to the V75. Apart from this, Gocciadoro always have something interesting. Michel Rotengatter normally comes with a bunch of nice 3 year olds. So he got this Omerta Boko coming out here. One last time in Volvega, and my God, we don't know how good this horse can be. So yeah, I mean, the V75 will have a huge pool running on Sunday. Yeah,
how does that bet work, Edison?
Yeah, so there, you know, unfortunately in the States, I it's something they're working on making available soon, but it's you know, essentially just like a straight pick seven when it comes to V75s. The V86 is a pick eight, essentially. It's the same thing here in the States. It's a matter of picking multiple winners. I will say here in the States, they've offered it in the past in AEWs. When they do, Pete, it's usually a 5 cent minimum wager. So, you know, for pick eight, it does make it pretty affordable, but I can tell you, payouts on this bet are still tremendous. And more importantly, again, the pool is just so big here in Scandinavia. I mean, again, truly millions of U.S. dollars.
Very exciting. We're going to have a lot more on this. There's going to be a deep dive from Edison and the team. And, of course, you can listen and watch both Julian and Edison on the feeds this weekend. Give us the full rundown, Edison, of where the best coverage is going to be in terms of what you're doing podcast-wise, and then, of course, what people can find on their ADWs.
Yeah, so this past weekend, Mike Probosi, Thomas Fenson, and I recorded a preview pod, so that's a good little, you know, background in the Swedish racing. I did the same thing last year for the intro to Sweden racing. Mike Loudon, another one of the ATG experts, joined me. Got a lot of quotes from our trainers here in the States, and, you know, that's kind of an evergreen episode. Those two are both definitely worth listening to get yourself a good preview for the race. Obviously, you're listening to this right now if you're listening, so this is a good little quick preview from, you know, you, me, and Julian. And Friday at 9:30, Pete, we're all under the same umbrella, so hopefully don't sue us for stealing the term, but Final Answer Show.
Yes, you're welcome to use it. You're welcome to use it.
We're going to do some last-minute handicapping. We're going to have a good panel to put together for that, and we'll provide some Saturday and Sunday handicapping, so you can play whatever you want. And hopefully, Pete, our listeners are early morning risers. 6:45 first post time at Solvalla Saturday and Sunday, 12:45 local here. Big race on Sunday. It'll go right around noontime, right around lunchtime on the East Coast.
Something to get up and drink your coffee and watch and gamble on. Julian, it was a pleasure having you. I look forward to a longer visit at some stage. We can talk a little bit more about your background and thoroughbreds over there in Sweden, but really enjoyed chatting with you today.
Thank you very much, Pete. Thank you for having me.
Edison, always a pleasure. Godspeed over there, and we'll be talking soon.
Always great, Pete.
We'll be back with more content right after this. The Belmont Stakes Festival at Saratoga is just a few short weeks away, but meanwhile, the action continues apace at the Belmont at the Big A Spring and Summer Meet. You can tune in on Saturday to watch a great card of racing highlighted by the Pennine Ridge Stakes. Join J.K., Maggie, Acacia, and the rest of the Fox team for live racing, expert analysis, expert picks, and more. You can bet on the races using Naira Bets. New members receive up to a $200 deposit match, nonstop fun at Belmont at the Big A. For showtimes and the full TV schedule, check out inthemoneypodcast.com/TV. Next up on the show, we continue with our international theme as we bring in a woman who coincidentally is in Sweden right now, but she's not here to talk about that. She's here to talk about racing in Asia. Forget Scandinavia. We covered them enough for now. We're going to move over to the Far East and talk about the Japanese Derby happening for our friends at the JRA Saturday night into Sunday morning. Alex Henry, welcome back to the In the Money Airwaves. How are things?
Things are excellent. I'm in the land of IKEA and Eleuthope, so happy to be here.
You should get, in all seriousness, I kid about moving on from talking Scandinavia, but if you can get over there on Sunday, you know some people. You should pull some strings and do it. But the foreign racing I know that you're the most interested in is the stuff that happens over there in Japan for the JRA, and what a racing calendar we have this weekend between the domestic stuff and the international stuff. We mentioned it's the Japanese Derby. Give us an overview. There's some really strong storylines here, but I'll let you run them down for us, starting with the favorite.
Absolutely. So the favorite for this iteration of the race is going to be our Satsuki Show winner, or the Japanese 2000 guineas winner from last time, Justin Milano. So he's a perfect 3-for-3 after winning that race over 2000 meters last out. He won by a desperate neck late, but I honestly think he was in command. He looked beaten at the top of the stretch, but he pulled it out to win. My tickets will be built around him and all the upside that he has with that awesome pedigree of his.
Makes perfect sense. And one, what do you think we're going to be looking at in terms of price there at the top of the market?
Super early odds have him sitting around 2.7 decimal, so it's going to be short, but that's why I like to use a lot of long shots. We know what could happen. We saw the NHK mile, Victoria mile. We've seen some prices this year so far. So, hey, bomb's going to happen.
I will mention that Alex and the team will have full coverage over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com with tips on the entire card, as well as free PPs for those who want to try their hands at picking the winner themselves and don't just want our experts to give them the answer to the test, want to take the test themselves. One fun thing we have in the Japanese Derby this year is a little Battle of the Sexes action. Does this really go with a chance?
Absolutely. So Regalia Rio, if you recall, was the favorite in that first Jewel of the Male classic Triple Crown, Japanese Triple Crown. She was the favorite last out in the Satsuki Show. Unfortunately, she did finish sixth. Jockey and trainer, you know, they admitted that the Achilles heel for this very talented filly is the starting gate. And we've seen that time and time again. We've discussed that ad nauseum with the Derby, with the Breeders' Cup. How can these Japanese horses get a better footing out of the gate? But, you know, she breaks slowly, they admit it. And she was just unable to get a jump on her male counterparts this time. Just a quick note on her, you know, veteran jockey Hitoshi Kitamura rode her in the Satsuki Show. But guess what? Christophe Lemaire chose her in the Japanese Derby. So that doesn't tell you something. I don't know what to tell you.
Interesting. No, he gets extra consideration anytime he turns up. The reason for keeping her keeping her against the males as opposed to her own sex has to do with the distance, do you think? Or what is that down to?
You know, I have to be honest. I'm not even sure what it's down to. The distance is the same in the Japanese Oaks and the Japanese Derby. I honestly think that the timing of the races wouldn't have worked out, seeing as she ran in the Satsuki Show, four weeks ago. It's a kind of four-week interval. So if she would have run in the Oaks last week, she would have only had 3 weeks. So perhaps she's peaking. They have her peaking every four. So I would think put that down to timing versus competition.
Oh, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And once you choose one path or the other, it's maybe a little bit harder to reverse field. What are we looking at in terms of her price?
She's sitting right about 7.7 decimal odds, and that's pretty fair, I would say, on her.
Starting to get into that longer, you know, mid-range price. You mentioned about long shots, though. You tip your hand that you've got something up your sleeve here. You're going to be looking to pair with these horses at the top of the market. Who might that be?
Yes, I have a juicy third choice. I think he'll be sitting third or fourth choice, but he'll be over 10.0 decimal odds, and that's a colt called Sixpence. Sixpence is the son of Kazuna, out of a mare that most of us familiar with U.S. Dirt racing will know, a mare named Finley's Lucky Charm. Sure. And she was a grade one winner, of the 7 Furlong Madison Stakes, multiple graded stakes winner in her illustrious dirt sprint career. This colt is 3 for 3. He has not raced over beyond 1,800 meters as he won the spring stakes last time out in March. But he, you know, definitely deserves to be bet. That pedigree is that classic mix of that Japanese stamina with that dirt sprint speed. So I think that showing he handled that 1,800 meters or 9 furlong distance extremely easily. And I even have a trainer angle on him too. So his trainer is 69-year-old Sakae Kuneda, and he's referred to as the master or the commander in Japanese racing publications. And you can even make an argument, perhaps they call him the coach in some translations. And he's announced he's going to retire by 2026, and the Derby has eluded him. That's his number one goal, to win the Japanese Derby, despite having Triple Crown winning fillies Almond Eye and Apapane in the past. So he's taken his time, selected the Japanese Derby for this very talented colt, and I think he's going to be dangerous at a juicy, bettable price.
I love to hear that. And yeah, we just saw it here in the States with Dwayne Lucas in the twilight years, getting a classic. And this one, you know, the difference being that was him sort of, you know, going back to his greatest hits here to have kind of a crowning achievement laid on in the piece would really be something, should Sixpence be able to get the job done. For much more information on the JRA, make sure you check out InTheMoneyPodcast.com on Saturday. Alex, while I have you, I'd be remiss. You know, you're people think I travel a lot. How about you? You're over in Sweden now. And then very recently had a trip out to California. Was that your first trip to Santa Anita, and how did that go?
Yes, believe it or not, I was born at Cedars-Sinai Hospital in Los Angeles, California. It was my first trip to Santa Anita. I chalked that up to my grandfather who got me into racing, not traveling to California all the times I've been. But it was absolutely a dream. The hospitality, the kindness of everyone, of Jeff Chapman, I think he goes by Chappie, of yep. Gio, Iggy Puglisi, that's a name that, you know, grew up watching, grew up hearing, just the kindest people you could ever imagine. I was lost for words. I was just drooling the whole time.
That's so cool. Where did you end up watching the races from, or were you just bouncing around? It's a great bounce around track too.
We bounced around. I watched the first race by myself right on the rail, got to stand right by the finish line. And then the very kind team, guest relations team, gave me the full tour. So we met in the paddock, and we got to be in the paddock during the third race to see all the trainers and jocks that, again, we see day in, day out every weekend at Santa Anita working hard on our behalf. And then we got to go to the winner's lounge, as I called it. I forgot what they called it, but I call it the winner's lounge because they serve champagne in there. And then if the owners win a race, they go into the winner's room and they get the champagne experience, and they get to watch their horse win the race over and over again in this really awesome enclosure. So we watched a couple from there. And then we rounded out. Thank you very much to Nick Hines, Sarge, getting us a table at the front runner, best seat in the house by the finish line. It was a dream day. Best day of my life. Don't tell my husband, please.
There's nowhere else to go from there. We'll leave it there because that's just too great. Alex, fantastic having you on, and we'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Pete. Appreciate it. Have a great one.
Let's see. We've been to Sweden. We've been to Japan. Now we're going to turn our attention to the Jersey Shore. We've got some terrific action at Monmouth this weekend. So happy to have Monmouth back in the fold, and happy to bring in a guest who hasn't been on these airwaves in a while, but he's got a lot of institutional knowledge when it comes to Monmouth, and he's always popular when he appears on these airwaves. Double D, Darren DeLucia, back with us now. Darren, how are things, my man?
Hello, Pistol Pete. I'm glad to be back. I was on a sabbatical for a little while. I'm back at my old home base, Monmouth Park. And we have some good stuff. Hopefully, you know, the last time I was on the air to all those shows, I did pretty well, giving out a lot of winners, exactas. So let's see if we could do something at Monmouth, and hopefully.
All right, let's dive right in. Race number four is where we're going to begin. We've got nickel claimers, fillies and mares going 6 furlongs on the dirt here. I'm curious, you know, we have this whole card to look at. I was surprised you picked this race. I figure that means you might have an angle in here, double.
I got a small angle. I mean, I know it's a beaten five. These, you know, probably the worst of the worst. But saying that, this race here, I picked a horse on the outside called Matula. Horse is trained by Mario Saray. The guy came in on fire. He's batting like 31% for the meet. I think there's a lot of speed inside. This horse is going to sit a trip, make one move on the outside. You're going to probably get a price. I mean, this horse was 36-1 at Laurel last time, 12-125, but the bond's hot. When a bond's hot, I like to stick with them because that means they're firing on all cylinders. So this horse should probably get 4, 5, 6-1. And I'll just give one other set for a horse for second. Maybe Sweet Blindness. Trainer changed to Pox. He's doing pretty well. I think he's like 17% for the year. This horse has speed, drops. Trainer change from Jeffrey Engelhardt's not a bad trainer. So I'm going to go Matula at a price with Sweet Blindness as my second. And then maybe the inside horse, Larimore, for the inside trip coming from Pox for third.
Interesting. So we see this a little bit differently, but I mean, you make a very creative case on Matula, the 7. I thought that the 2, Our Little Tiger, might be tough in here, double. This horse, to me, just looking at the form, looks to be rounding into form. And I thought this this Calbred looked a little bit interesting in this spot. Contested a fast pace last time, got within a length. And I thought that race was of comparable quality to this one. I definitely see your case on Sweet Blindness. I had listed that one as a one to use potentially as a backup. You know, it's hard to get a line on these nickel claimers off these kind of breaks, but you know, Potts is one of these trainers I have trouble with. It seems like I'm always zigging and zagging. If I can include as a backup, I will. And I'll mention the 3, Tappet's Girl as well. This one coming off this very long layoff. Again, hard to know what to do at this level off this layoff, but she's got back races that fit very well. So I had a 2-3-5 and a 7-5-1 for Double D to kick things off. You hadn't mentioned the 5th race to me as one to talk about, but to me there was a potential short-priced horse that you might be able to lean on in here in the form of number 7, Spiteful Election, going out for Grand Motion. Came back off the layoff and ran pretty well, I thought, in that spot in a race that looked on paper to me to be tougher than this one. Might be able to prove to be the best speed, turf, top and bottom for that one. Nothing too creative, but just one of these horses that improved a lot on turf, pedigree to improve more, and in the right hands. Did you have a quick thought on race 5, or is that one you're just watching?
No, I looked it over. I mean, I looked at the whole card. I'm going to have to agree with you 100%. The horse was first time turf, bred up and down. Spitestown, who's by Spitestown, Artie Schiller-Mare, speed, Grand Motion's horse has actually been running really well. I've been watching Laurel. His horse has been running pretty well, so I'd have to go with you. Be a short price, but I think we could get a single in the pick 5 or the pick whatever it may be that they have the race pick 4, pick 5.
Let's talk about race number 6. We've got $12,000 claimers going a mile on the dirt. Double, we'll keep this one with you.
All right, this is a race where you have 2 drop-downs, and I'll talk about both of them. One of the drop-downs back is Alabama Slammer for Darren Rodriguez. I think he's at Tampa Bay and Delaware Park. That's where he bases himself. This horse was claimed for an optional 16, got beat a neck, then the horse ran optional 16, no good, going short. Then he ran him long for optional 32. Now he's back in for 12.5. But this wasn't my pick. This was like my second choice. My pick in the race was going to be Anti-Gravity. Fresh off a layoff for Dan Ward. That's an ex-Jerry Hollandor for assistant. The guy's a pretty good trainer. This is back class all the way. Drops. Has 3 wins, a 2nd and 3/3 at Monmouth. You got Paco. Looks like this horse will be on the lead of Stalking. So that is going to be my pick at probably a short price. Second choice would be Alabama Slammer, another little dropper. And then my 3rd pick for a bomb would be Homeschool, back to Mario Saray. Right now is leading trainer, hot barn. Probably don't like the turf. Probably is going to be a closer, sit on the rail, make one move. So at a bomb, you could throw that horse in. So I'm all about Anti-Gravity, Dan Ward, Paco Lopez.
I had in the mix as well, both those runners you mentioned, those droppers I had on sort of my B line in this race. I thought that was an interesting case, and I'll ask you your opinion about what you think of number three, King Ramos. I just thought this horse was getting back to the best surface, facing a weaker group of $12,000 claimers, I thought, than what he faced down at Tampa. And I just love the fact that this one's career best effort in 29 starts and 82 by her speed figure came here at Monmouth on the dirt. And I thought this one could just trip out sitting behind the speed that you mentioned. You give that one any, I mean, obviously it wasn't in your top three, but do you give any a chance at all?
I give everything a chance. These races, these droppers, they're hard to figure out. You know, Monmouth just opened a week ago. So I'd say, yes, the horse is one for one at Monmouth. So, and Kathleen O'Connell, very good job. And you got Castillo, top five rider, and Aqueduct for the winter, shipping his tech back to Monmouth. So I would say all systems go. You have a good point there.
All right, let's see what happens as we move forward to race number seven. We've got stakes action, the Cliffhanger Stakes, a mile and a 16th on the turf. And we've got a mutual friend with a horse in this race. Our buddy Larry Roman has Laughing Boy, who does look like potentially the clear speed. My issue with Laughing Boy, though, this is a horse that's run 32 times, never run on the turf, doesn't have pedigree that says much in the way of turf. I don't want to let Larry beat me, I'll put it that way, but I was going to go a different direction, at least for the top pick, in the form of number six, General Jim. The horse just looked very obvious to me. Second time off the layoff, another one getting back to the best surface. I felt like there was an excuse for the last run. It was in a grade two, the Hall of Fame Stakes at Saratoga. Got a little bit lit up and ended up contesting that fast pace before falling away. Something clearly went wrong in that race as it preceded a layoff. I think this just horse might be a little bit better on turf looking at the body of work and could just be well spotted in here. I went with General Jim, a little bit of respect to Laughing Boy, who looks to clear speed despite the lack of pedigree potentially. What did you think about the Cliffhanger Stakes?
The Cliffhanger. You could have went four different ways here. So I was going to go with the champ. The champ is the Jersey bred champ. One of our old friends, Kelly Breen. He's pure gold. This horse has earned almost 500,000 lifetime. Monmouth Park, eight starts, five wins, a second and a third for earnings of 269,000. The horse needed the race off the layoff last time. Kelly Breen's been a dominant trainer on the Monmouth circuit for years. I think Kelly Breen comes out firing all cylinders with He's Pure Gold, with Paco. They team up to win a lot of races, so that'd be my pick. Then you have a good point. General Jim back on the grass. He's got a good little rider on Chaminade. He's got Shug McGahee. I mean, there's two other horses I was going to mention. This is a very tough race. Forever Super. You got Michael Trimbetta, this horse four times at Monmouth, two wins and a third. So that's another horse that I think definitely will be in there. I wasn't sure. There was another horse I was going to mention there. You got Chuck Spina's horse in there also. That's a horse off a layoff. Chuck Spina's barn's going real well. 14 starts, three wins, four seconds, three thirds. That's another Monmouth lover. But I'm going to go with my boy, Kelly Breen, Paco Lopez. He's Pure Gold. Get the money to Jersey bred.
I get it. I mean, in the right hands, and Kelly Breen, leading trainer down there many times, friend of the show. We've been happy to have him on it. And one of the people, thanks to you, Double, calls me Pistol Pete when I see him. So, and also the only guy who has a better hat collection than me. So lots of positives personally and on the racetrack for that one. It's a spread race for you, 4, 6, 7, and 2. I'm going to lean on the 6. Larry's runner, Laughing Boy, I'm guessing you just, you know, obviously you respect the speed, but I'm guessing you doubt the turf for that one.
Yeah, I love Larry. Larry's my boy, but that horse has speed. You know, Chuck Spina's horse could show a little speed to butter him up, but you are correct. The horse's speed. I just don't trust the horse in the Cliffhanger.
I got you. It's a stake, and it's a hard, not the easiest spot to make your turf debut. We'll see how it plays out. I'll probably have one backup line with that one and mainly run through General Jim, and then I will try to feather in some of the ones you mentioned, especially the Jersey bred, the Kelly Breen runner. He's Pure Gold in race number 7. Let's talk about
Pistol, race. I just wanted to mention one other thing. In that race, the Cliffhanger, you also have Graham Motion shipping up with a horse by the name of Datman, which is in the mix also, handled by a jockey named Jay Ruiz. If you don't know this kid, rides at Laurel, Pimlico, Delaware, handled by Scotty Silva. This kid is a rider that everybody's got to start watching. One of the best turf riders in the Mid-Atlantic. I just wanted to give him a shout.
I don't mind it at all. The horse doesn't look bad. I mean, it was a $100,000 stake at Laurel last time, closed without the benefit of a particular setup, you know, finished ahead of Forever Super, who you mentioned. I was worried about being too far back against what I thought was maybe a slightly tougher group. But, I mean, there were serious horses in that race, English B among them. I wouldn't be shocked to see that one do well. I take your point. It could be a big spread race, but sometimes for me, double, when I see these big spread races, I'll just take a shot and say, I'm going to pick one of them. If I'm right, maybe I can pick up some equity in these picks. For me, the main one, 80% of the money will run through the six general gym. One more race we were going to talk about before we get to our Monmouth plays of the day. Race number 8 is a starter allowance. I had one I like quite a bit in this spot, in the form of number 3, The Judge and Jury. What I really like about this horse is shown the ability to adapt to a variety of running styles and just appears to have a little bit something left at the finish, which I like to see. Horse is on a 2-race win streak. I'm wondering if The Judge and Jury can make it 3 on the bounce here in this starter allowance that goes as race 8 on Monmouth on Saturday. How did you see this one?
I'm with you 100%. You got The Judge and Jury. You got Jamie Ness, hottest Mid-Atlantic trainer we have right now in the United States. I mean, the guy's firing on all cylinders, leading trainer at 2 or 3 different tracks. That'd be my pick. Now, saying that, you're going to have a favorite in there with him, probably co-favorite called Disco Bowl, Jacobson Castillo. Now, this horse ships in from Santa Anita. I'm never a fan of those horses shipping on the East Coast. Some people have different versions. I don't like it. Castillo, like I said before, handled by Dylan Fazio. Kid did a great job. 5th leading rider at Aqueduct for the winner. Jacobson ships horses all over. It's hard for me to get a line on the guy. The guy does a good job. I don't like this horse to hit the board. This horse will probably be back 6-5, 7-5. I'm going to go with The Judge and Jury, but I'm going to give you a bomb. The bomb in the race is an old horse named after a trainer that was a phenomenal trainer in New York called Hushin. This horse will be about 10-15-1. I don't know if Hushin's numbers are good enough to beat The Judge and Jury, but last year the horse won wire to wire at 20-1. I believe this horse is going to stalk inside or be on the lead. I would take a flyer with him at 9-1. Judge and Jury with Hushin. That's my plays of the 8th race.
I think there is plenty of speed. I think the Judge and Jury is going to sit in behind. You are right, though. Disco Ball is going to take a ton of money because just on speed figures, I think everybody's going to go this way. But the horse isn't exactly a winning kind, and I do think he's going to face plenty of pace pressure. I wouldn't fall out of my chair if he got the job done for DJ David Jacobson. But I do think the value probably lies elsewhere. So, yeah, it's a good card. I like the fact we have just enough agreement and just enough areas where we're going to go our own way to make it interesting. We'll follow. We'll see how it plays out. Just one thing left to do, Double. Give me your Monmouth Park play of the day for Saturday.
Monmouth Park play of the day is probably going to be a little bit of a price. Race 4. I picked him once. I'm going to pick it again. Matula, Mario Saray, Barnhart, outside closer. I'm not liking a horse that betting closes at Monmouth Park, but this horse race looks like it's a ton of speed. Let's take a little flyer, maybe between 4-6-1. Let's keep the hot barn going at 4-6-1. Matula, race 4, Monmouth Park.
I like it. You are being bold. I'll be a little more boring or conservative in terms of I'm going to make my play of the day for Saturday, the 7-runner Spiteful Election in race number 5. As you mentioned, one to maybe really look to hammer in doubles coming in and coming out with some of those others we mentioned. Double D, great having you back. Look forward to having you again soon.
Thank you for having me, and hopefully I'll give out a lot of winners like I did in the past, and then we'll keep the ball rolling for the rest of the meet.
Want to take a few minutes to check in with an old friend and a man whose company I'm a huge fan of. You've heard me talk a lot about Kutt, K-U-T-T, and the Kutt betting app. I've been very active on it this baseball season. Just wanted to check in about some of the things going on with our friend Sim Harmon. Sim, how are things?
Pete, thank you so much for having me. Things are great. How are things with you?
Things are very good. It's a busy time of year, and I'm not just talking about horse racing and the Triple Crown season. Very excited about some of the stuff you guys have coming up. My perception as a super fan of Kutt would be that as much as you're known for the social betting aspect and challenge betting and betting amongst friends, the public betting, that's a little bit more like a traditional sports book in that you throw a bet out there and hope to get it matched except with much more favorable financial terms than you're going to find it at Sportsbook. I found it's never been easier. I don't think I've gotten a bet at the price not matched in the last couple months since baseball began. Am I making that up, or has your liquidity increased?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's definitely what's happened. I think as more people join the app, more you obviously have more active users. And so what we found is that it's as simple as more users equals more matches right now. So, about 90% of our bets are being filled at the moment, which is great. You know, it's obviously something that the biggest issue with peer-to-peer obviously is the issue of, hey, what happens if my bet does not get filled? And that's just happening less and less these days. And then I think with the fact that we have more betting markets is just, it brings more users to the table as well. So
let's talk about that because the betting markets piece of the pie is very interesting, because you're not just limited to sporting events. You've got other things on there, including pop culture and, hey, two things that are very relevant for this year, Olympic stuff as well as politics.
Exactly. So, I mean, obviously Olympics, I think people are excited to bet America, you know, I think everyone always is. And then, you know, kind of in that same vein, people are also polarized when it comes to politics. And so we have we're super excited about the election from a betting perspective, because obviously this is going to be a close one, but something that people love to bet on is politics. And so, yes, in addition to all the sports stuff, which, you know, that ranges from MLB this summer to UFC, we have the non-sports stuff that is starting to heat up in a big way on cut. So, yeah, 2024 election is right around the corner, and we are seeing an increased interest in that.
Yeah, whether you're betting what you think is going to happen, or the emotional hedge bet, I've heard of people.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the funny part. You know, something like politics, you know, it's almost like betting against your favorite team. Is you can play both sides, and either your wallet or your head is going to be very happy.
Very, very funny. You mentioned UFC. That's new. How has the liquidity been on that side of things? And is that something you're looking to continue?
You know what's it's funny is that growing up, I never was a UFC fan. I never watched it. That's changed a bit just because of the nature of the business. You know, obviously you need to pay attention to what's going on in the sporting world. But I never knew how rabid a fan base the UFC fans were. It's incredible. That was our number one most requested betting market prior to its launch a couple weeks ago. And it's been fantastic so far. You know, and it's people are betting on the, not even the first or second undercard. It's the, you know, fifth, sixth, and seventh undercard. You know, the people that are the very first ones out there, in the entire event. So that's been fantastic so far. But I mean, again, to your point earlier, more users equals better liquidity. And what we found is that people's betting interests are just so varied. That there's usually there's a great chance that your bet will be filled, because there is someone else out there of our tens of thousands of users who is excited about whatever bet, whatever event.
I've been talking about that using Cut as an alternative to a traditional sports book, but it's also social betting as its core, as you've said. And one thing that you've done to enhance that I've noticed is these improved social features. Describe those for folks.
Exactly. And I guess to take a quick step back as a reminder to everyone people who have heard this, and, you know, as just kind of telling people who are hearing this for the first time, the biggest difference in Cut versus a, you know, traditional book versus a lot of our other kind of betting platforms out there is the fact that, number one, it's peer to peer. You're always betting against someone else. And number two is the fact that we have social features, right? So it's a bit more of an interactive, fun, engaging experience. Everyone's got a user profile. You can chat directly with people who you're betting against. You know, you get your bet filled, and then within 10 seconds, you know, you've got a message from someone saying, "All right, man, you're going down," or, you know, "Hey, tell me about you, or are you a fan of the team, or do you just like to bet?" And we're creating these communities within Cut, right? And so as an extension of that, we have these groups that are in Cut. So you come on, you say, "Hey, this is my favorite team. I think for you, let's take the Mets, for instance." You're a Mets fan. You say you're a Mets fan. And then you join the Mets group, right? And you get to talk to other fans of the Mets. Take it a step further. maybe you join your, and we got to get you guys to create this, but, you know, create an in the money group, and you could actually interact directly with your fellow horse lovers, and bet on them, and, you know, bet against your followers and your listeners. And so again, this creates that community aspect that a lot of other, not a lot of, most all other betting platforms are missing, because that's where we really see the value is. People like betting against other people who share their interests.
And if you are somebody who's interested in just gambling in a more traditional way, you can do that too. And you can do that with two main advantages. One is the way your commission structure works. I'll let you describe that. You're getting a better price essentially than you're going to get at a sports book, even if you just want to gamble. The social features are great, but you don't, if that's not for you, there's still a lot of reasons to download and play on the Cut app. And another one of them is the fact that we still have this deposit bonus going. ITM24 gets you 10% of your deposit in free money. So as I like
That's to correct.
Say, don't miss this opportunity to be handed free money. Describe the commission structure and how it differs from a traditional sports book.
For sure. So we take a 3% transaction fee on every transaction. Doesn't matter the size, you know, size doesn't, whatever. 3%. And that's infinitely cheaper than a sports book, right? On a sports book, they're charging 9-10% on every single bet. That's the VIG, right? For us, it's not free, right? So we do have to charge something so we can keep the lights on and try to make some money, but so we can get better features for you guys. But we have the 3% transaction fee, which is somewhat negated by the fact that every single bet that you make on Cut, you actually get rewards. You get cash back, right? And so it's, in our opinion, it's the best thing we can offer that allows us to keep the lights on, but makes total financial sense for all of our users because it's saving money on every single bet.
Very well put. Always a pleasure catching up with you, my friend. We're going to have you back on soon and going to be continuing to talk about Cut. Download the app today from the App Store and get started. K-U-T-T. Sim, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, sir, for having me again. My pleasure as usual.
Next up on the show, a first-time guest, somebody who I would have talked to long ago if I was still covering handicapping contests the way that I used to, which was on a daily basis, because he's had a lot of success in that world, most recently winning the Preakness Betting Challenge from our friends over at ExpressBet. He's also an industry guy. Frankly, I wish we could have him longer. We'll have him back soon to do his whole bio, but very grateful to welcome to the In the Money airwaves, Seth Morris. Seth, what's going on, buddy?
Just driving out to the Hamptons to meet with a couple of clients before I turn around and fly to Las Vegas for the weekend for a little bit of music.
Fantastic. Who are you going to see out there?
I am going to see my favorite band, Dead & Company.
Oh, very, very nice. Were you now? How long have you been down that particular rabbit hole? Were you, you know, I've been going to shows since the 80s myself.
It was 89. July 89 was my first show. I was a freshman in between my freshman and sophomore year of college, and I've pretty much been hooked ever since. And I actually love this this rendition of the band. I thought the last couple of years were awesome. I'm really pumped for
Are they at the Sphere? Did I see that correctly? That's supposed to be
They are at the Sphere, and I've seen a couple of videos. Just I don't want to wreck it, so I don't want to see too many, but I've seen a couple of things that were just amazing. A couple of my fraternity brothers from Cornell just sent me stuff, you know. Basically, it looks like they're on a spaceship flying, you know, took off from the 8, and they're just flying over San Francisco. And, you know, it looks like it's sunny in San Francisco day. And, of course, they're inside in Vegas. And so
amazing.
Super interesting. Yeah, super cool.
Well, fly safe out there. It's going to be a ton of fun, no doubt about it. Let's do your Cliff Notes horse racing biography. You talked a little bit about your education. How long have you been in the business, and how did you discover contests?
I started betting, you know, when I was in high school, you know, quickly, in industry wise. I mean, I met Steve Miotti when I was, you know, 31 years old. I was a trader out in California, and I just went and shoveled shit on Saturdays and hung out for a couple of years with him. And I bought my first horse with him, a $2,000 horse that we ended up winning with in my New York Jet Silk. So that was awesome. So I've been pretty hooked ever since. Moved back to New York for, you know, the floor trading dried up. I worked at a couple of funds, and you know, we got into a couple of horses. I bred a couple, bought a couple, and eventually met a guy, Steve Mack, you know, real quick, started Long Lake Stables. And, you know, we worked for a long time together. We've kind of had a little bit of a hiatus, but I think we're definitely going to get back together. And I think really all we did was buy like one or two horses a year, give me the experience of really getting to the sales for years, knowing that like ultimately we were going to get a lot bigger. So this, you know, last year I went into Bloodstock full time, and I have a couple of really great clients right now. So I've been able to buy several, you know, what I think are top 2 year olds, spend a bunch of money. So I just got back from Timonium. So I'll wait, you know, for the full bio, you know, next time we speak. I know we have limited time, but really excited to have gotten into it. You know, my 2 year old lists, I think, are excellent. You know, our Pinhooks did okay this year, and you know, I think we'll be back swinging at the yearling sales again. So
let's get to the gambling side of things, specifically contests. How long have contests been a part of your repertoire?
You know, I started getting into the BCBC quite a while ago. I think the first year was 2011. I met Christian Helmers out in Vegas this year, and I told him, you know, I was like the last, it was my first contest, and I get out there and I have no idea what I'm doing, and every seat's taken, and I ended up sitting at a table with him. And I handicapped unbelievably. And I mean, to be honest, I had like a 20-something-to-1 winner in the distaff. I was sitting there thinking about and trying to think who won the marathon. But I mean, it was a huge bomb. And I know Dale Romans won the mile and paid $90 that year with a horse I had, you know, liked a lot. So I just, you know, for years and years and years, I'm sure everybody has stories, but I feel like I've handicapped the Breeders' Cup well and just kind of botched the betting at times and or lost a nose the right, you know, the wrong race. And so I've been at it for a while. I'm sure Tim Schramm knows I probably put, you know, $100,000 into the BCBC potentially. And I won it a few years, but I definitely pumped some money in. And NHC, I really started trying for the first time in 2018, and I got in, finished 18th that year, and I left a couple of horses on the table that I loved. I mean, legitimately, I could have won it. Then the next few years, I mean, I've been absolutely nowhere. The way I play is like, I don't care if I look stupid. I'm either going to look stupid or look smart, right? Playing the kind of prices I play. So there are some years where I'm going to finish, you know, 500th, 600th at $20. And, you know, this year I caught a heater on Saturday. So it was like a great experience.
That's great. And you ended up very high up on the leaderboard this time around, cashing to make up for all those Breeders' Cups. And I'm sure a lot of other contests play as well, it's fair to say.
Yeah, sure. You know, like everybody, you know, like, look, you, I think people that bet the races all the time, you kind of need your big hits in between. That was obviously a giant one. But if you play pick fives, pick sixes, that kind of thing, you get to go through a cold streak. You're cold. And, you know, that's why you want to hit a big one every month or so. And if you do that, you know, you come out on top. Depends how, you know, people play it. That's the way I play. You know, I'm not somebody that wants to put a ton at risk and, you know, bet to place and kind of like work my bankroll up that way. I just blow up when I do that. So.
What do you like about live bankroll play? You had this big success in the Preakness betting challenge. Do you feel like you're figuring it out, or was it more a case of the stars aligning for you on Saturday?
I just think I got lucky, to be honest. I was walking around Timonium. I said, look, I'm not going to be able to watch these early races, so I'm not going to be able to watch post parades and do what I normally do, but this is a $1,500 contest. I'm going to be betting $1,000 on Preakness Day no matter what. So it was like kind of a no-brainer to enter it. Yeah. And I looked at the second race and I said, you know, like it's, you know, the it's raining, the turf's, you know, a lot of times in these big days, like nobody's really betting early, or the people, you know, at least the tourists aren't. And, you know, while you might think that that would lead to less value in the pool, sometimes like I just think, you know, you get one of these local trainers, or you just get something early in the day that, you know, people aren't paying attention. So I looked at the race, not like I loved it, you know, loved it. I just said, this seems like a really wide open race. You know, there was a Grand Motion horse in it. That was a, I think, a relatively big favorite. That, you know, I'm a big believer in fractions. So I look at incremental fractions in my formulator. You know, so even though turf courses could obviously be different, I love looking at someone that runs an 11 in there, or, you know, just the type of fractions that might fit a particular scenario, and I try to place the horses. So in this race, I said, well, this horse ran really well, but he had, you know, ran 49-3, and then he got away with a 26 and change. So I looked at couple other horses. I looked at this Stolen Treasure, who's Jack Fisher, you know, steeplechase trainer, longtime Midwest, Mid-Atlantic guy. You know, the horse is going to be fit, you know, and I looked at the fractions and I said, well, this horse went 49-2, 23-4, 23-1, 11-3 in his last. I'm like, this horse has a little bit of pop, you know, maybe not enough pop to win on a firm turf, you know, against the lounge condition, but on one of these little, you know, little bit of give in the track. Some of these other ones don't like it. I gave him a shot. And I think at that time he was between like, he was like 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1. And then there was this other horse, the 9 horse, who's what, DeCivio. And this horse only had one turf race, which was his debut. in a sprint where he went 24 flat, 23 and 2, 11 flat, 11 and 3. So I said, you know what? He has some explosiveness. I don't know if he'll really, you know, and then I think he had a series of dirt races where he did stretch out. So I said, you know, look, he looks like he has some fitness. He's going to be a huge bomb. I'll bet $100 on the race. I'll bet 25 to win in place. And I'm pretty sure this Fisher horse is going to run his race. I didn't even bet the 9 to win. I mean, I actually bet the place, which I never do. I just bet the place on this, on the, that, 5 horse, St. John's or whatever his name was. And, you know, and he ended up finished second. I caught that exacta, you know, I've got 6,300 and like, I was in great shape, you know? So to me, the stars just aligned. I just got lucky. I bet 100 and I happened to pop it.
I assume you'll be wading back into the waters on Monday for the contest on Memorial Day, the Gold Cup Challenge available from our friends at ExpressBet.
I'm sure I will. I'm sure I'll be handicapping and, yeah, I'm staying in Vegas, so I'll be, recovering from Sunday night, but yeah, I'm sure the races are a little, you know, it's nice and late out there, so I will be there.
That's great. We encourage people to check that out, expressbet.com/tournaments, and there are qualifiers, feeders in the days up to it, including on Saturday, which is the day we're going to run through a very quick, reckoning of this Pick 5. Love to have you back. In addition to talking more about your bio, I love what you were saying about internal fractions and using Formulator. That's something we'll have to have a much longer conversation about. But for the moment, let's dive into this Pick 5. It starts off in race number 6, where we've got Calbred fillies and mares with 100,000 in the pot, going a mile in the Franz Valentine. Was there anything you fancied in here?
I really didn't. I started off saying, well, you know, maybe this sneaker is speed. And, you know, it looked like from the rail, Carmen Miranda was going to be speed. And then I you know, started trying to say, look, this might be a pretty quick pace. Maybe this Tam horse can be speed. You know? And then, and I started making multiple cases for horses. I got to the outside. I said, wow, virtually everyone's logical. I didn't want to give out an all in the, in here, in a Pick 5. But virtually, the first time I went through this, I said, this is the kind of race where, you know, watch, the favorite will win. But like, I have no idea what's going to happen here. I feel a lot better about the 3 middle races than I do about this.
Well, that's fine. We can say, I'll say it's a graded all from you, but I do have bad news, or maybe good news if you want to fade me. I do think the 11 Stay and Scam looked the strongest to me coming out of that graded stakes company. She has been on the lead herself in other races, but I think the way the race shape goes here, you know, those have been slower paces. And I think you're right. There's a lot of speed to the inside. I think she's going to be able to get over and get a good sit in the second flight and maybe have a little bit too much for them. I take your point. Beyond her, I feel like I could throw a dart and come up with something. But for me, I was going to take a little bit of a shot with Stay and Scam. You'll be playing the don't pass line as we move on to race number 7, Calbred fillies and mares against 6 furlongs on the dirt for this one. This is one where it sounds like you have a little bit stronger of an opinion.
Oh, I do. The first thing I saw was Dancing Cat, and I saw the 21-1 fraction in his debut. Yeah. Peter Miller off the bench, and I said wire to wire, and I put a question mark. And then I said, is this horse possibly a single? I went through, and I said no. The horse on the rail is 4-for-6 at the distance, 5-for-8 in Anita, 10-for-23, a win machine. You know, the rail post doesn't necessarily suit, but has one from the rail. Betting a Pick 5 sequence and going deep, how could I not use that one? And then the 2 horse that, you know, you might was just behind the rail horse, was interestingly trained, but acclaimed by Rockingham Ranch, who I know Peter Miller has trained for years. Sure. So I just wrote Rockingham versus Pete. I've got to use that one too. So those were my 3 in that race. And in the first race, I did cut 3 of them out and ended up with 8. But I have nothing to give you as to why, right?
I just want to say,
my actual ticket, I only have 8.
I do send around little notes to the In the Money Plus people. So just, it'll be faster if you tell me the 3 that you cut from the first race.
Understood. I'm pretty sure I cut Tams, I cut Carmen Miranda, and I cut, there was one more that I cut. I'll find it. It was something to the inside that I didn't write down. I said I'm in the car. I just can't really remember.
Gotcha. You
cut Jesse Bear, maybe Jesse.
Yep. 1, 2, and 6. And I assume, you know, the 1 and the 2 don't have terrible form, or the 1 and the 6 don't have terrible form. But I'm assuming you just cut them because of the pace that you figure they'll be.
I cut them because of the scenario, and I just think sneaker makes it really tough for the rail horse. And there's too many other possibilities that I think will get better trips.
Well, see, I love that idea, and I'm glad you brought me back there, because if you're gonna spread like that, you can still get equity if you're leaving out horses who are going to be at or near the top of the market. And while I do think Stay and Scam will be the favorite, you're eliminating a horse that's probably going to be the second choice in Carmen Miranda. And I do think Tam's Little Angel is going to catch money too. So I'm glad we came back to that. I don't have much to add on race 7. I was super boring. Danzig Cat just had the best form and figures, was going to get the best trip, has fired fresh before, and looks to be working well. So with that, we'll move on to some stakes action in the form of the Snow Chief, 1 1/8 on the turf for this one. Another race I put down as having likely a pretty quick pace. I thought it would be run to suit Curlin's Chaos, the 5-runner, back in 27 days off that nice-looking allowance win in a common race. But the real thing for me is I just think the race is going to be, you got a lot of speed in here, and this horse should just be able to sit, and I thought might go by. Not terribly creative, a horse that's going to probably be 5-2, 3-1. You have anything more exciting for us in race 8?
I won't go with more exciting. I would use the horse that Curlin's Chaos beat last time, simply because I believe Herrera is now on Curlin's Chaos. It might be Berrios off, or was it Herrera last time? It may have been whatever it is.
Herrera stuck with Curlin's Chaos.
Okay, so listen, I respect Herrera, but you could possibly get into trouble. So while I would never not have this horse on my ticket, I think you have to use 2x4. And while the rail horse, you know, I think is a massive bet against, because the sprint form means 0 going 1 1/8.
Yeah,
I do think this horse, Final Storm, who's coming out of sprints and sharp, he's bred too well to route to throw out on a wide ticket.
So 4, 8, and 5 would be your pick, sort of in roughly in that order. Would you grade those out a little bit more, or does that sound about right?
You know, I think it's hard. Like I said, the 4 and the 5 are very difficult to separate. I would separate them only on the potential for people to be on the 5 more than the 4.
Yes,
because of win last time. And the jockey that could potentially get into a little bit of trouble. And as you know, in a turf race, that could mean a length or two, which is to me the difference between these horses. Yeah.
No, makes perfect sense. Let's talk about another stake. We go on to the Melaire 3-year-old Calbred Fillies with 125,000 in the pot, going 1 1/16. Seth, we'll keep it with you.
I really think it's a 2-horse race here. You know, I thought the rail horse was a bridesmaid type. The next horse was kind of just a speedball. Loretta Lynn, you know, was solid on dirt, but didn't like the grass. I thought Grand Slam Smile was hard to deny in here. I thought very fast works after a nice 5-week freshening. I thought he looked pretty good. The next two, I thought, were a little too slow. You know, this Madison was really no match. No real breeding or reason to think the horse will improve here. And then this Roberta's Love on the outside, I thought had speed and quality. You know, I like Collected as a sire. I think just look dangerous to me. So those would be the two that I'd use in there.
I had the same two. I mean, but kind of master of the obvious. I did give a little bit of preference to Roberta's Love, just figuring this one talked about interior fractions before. I thought ran some good interior fractions, the Palma Barn flying. And I think sometimes it can be an advantage to be in that, unless it's a great rail day, which it often isn't these days at Santa, but I thought would be in maybe the superior, just pressing attacking position. So I had it 7-4. Are you 7-4 or 4-7 or
kind of? I mean, I looked at it really from a pick 5 perspective. None of these, you know, if you said, hey, what race would you be betting to win? You know, that Peter Miller horse I thought was interesting, like that Miller Rockingham kind of thing. So I might play around in that race. But in terms of just these spread races, like I could care less who wins. I'm rooting for the bigger price.
Yes.
And, you know, once going back to that first race, not to talk about the horses, I have no problem. I mean, that horse could definitely win the race. For me, I don't like singling favorites because I feel like most of the value for me, I don't want to like make it a pick 4 and use the favorite. If I think there's an overwhelming favorite, I just won't bet the sequence. That's the way I play. Like, I'd rather beat it because those are the ones that crush it. When everybody's on a horse, you know, I'll go back, you know, years ago, I ended up only hitting 5 of 6 because I singled Evening Jewel, but we beat Rachel Alexander that day. So, like, I thought she was vulnerable. And so that was the day I was like, I have to bet this sequence because she might lose. Like, why? I don't know, but I just had a gut feeling, right?
You pick up a lot of equity. You pick up a lot of equity when you do that. And if you've got the bankroll and the betting personality, I don't doubt from a, like an expected value point of view that it's the way to go, especially if you're trying to do this really to make money. I mean, a lot of times we talk about, I mean, a lot of times I'll play these bets for, yeah, I mean, I'm trying to make money, of course, but there's also an action and a mental frustration element where I'm more inclined to throw those. Look, if I don't like the horse at all, I will leave it off the ticket. But the ones that I just deem too live, I still may single that shorty, but I'm not doubting that what you're saying is correct in terms of, you know, if all you cared about, put all the mental jujitsu aside, and how are you going to make more money at the end of your life? It's probably approaching it exactly the way you just described.
And I don't know if mathematically I'm right. I don't have any like back testing to prove it out. It's just, I know for me, when I'm like, oh my God, I'm so, and I mean, Preakness contest notwithstanding, where I hammered Fluffy Socks in a double, like when I, that was the first leg, when I need a favorite to complete something in, it's like, it could be Irad, it could be Chad, it could be play, it doesn't matter who it is and how perfect the setup is, something goes wrong. So like, it's just for me mentally, my mental sanity or lack thereof, I just don't do it, you know.
That's funny. That's so interesting. Yeah. I thought you were making more of a pure math argument about don't single the horse everybody else is singling. But even for you, there's an insanity insurance element to it. That actually makes me feel a little bit better.
I'd just rather not bet. You know, like, and sometimes like I'd rather not bet than be like, oh my God, I'm totally live. I've got everything to fierceness. Oh my God. You know? wait, what happened? A logical horse won at 18-1 and it paid $1 zillion. You know, like, yep. That's where, you know, and then I start saying, well, now I need to use 8 horses, you know. So like I said, I would way rather, my bigger successes have been singling a Nisos at 6-1 or something like that, where it's like, I love a horse at 5-1, you know, 7-2 to 7-1. And I'm just, I don't care that the horse isn't 2-5. That's the horse that I'd go and bet, you know, $400 to win on or something. So if I'm going to do that, I'd rather bet 800 in a, you know, in a multi where I'm like using that horse and just hoping for some chaos in a couple of races.
We're just about out of time, but we have one race left. It's the Nightcap. We're going down the hill, 6.5 Cal Bred allowance, big full field. Who do you like?
I think it's a wide open race. I think that just looking through the horses that I have circled, were the second Carla Gaines horse, I guess, Tis a Good Thing. I thought the horse showed speed in the one turf race, and you never know. Lemon Sushi doesn't love to win, but is fast and dangerous and hard to ignore. Leia's Candy had a couple of fast turf races, picks up Rispoli. Eddie's Last is the kind that always hits the board, not necessarily win, but kind of a must use. And I thought it was hard to exclude this Our Bucky, who, you know, any horse that debuts at 2-5 and gets the job done, they kind of know what they have. And you know, why are they running on the grass? So this might be one where Our Bucky is just better than everybody and like freaks. You know, and then Mayotte's in the race too. I think like, you know, I would use that horse just if, you know, if the horse draws in. So that's what I was thinking. That's why my ticket was ridiculously big, about 8x3x3x2x5. But those were the five that I would focus on. I thought this Moon Ice was very unlikely to get a repeat trip on the lead. I thought the Chick's Dig horse was just a bad turf horse. Uncle John's, you know, is a Grateful Dead.
I was going to say, you got the hunch play there.
I wrote hunch play, but it's time to hang, hanging type. This is what I wrote on my, you know, on the back of this napkin or whatever it is. Thought this Rhythm horse, I said fits, but kind of a bad last race, probably over the top. And then this horse on the rail, I just question whether the horse wants turf at all. So that's don't like the race, would spread a little bit. Like I said, if you have to really hammer in a race, I think we came up with that one with the two logical horses, that outside horse and the, you know, the one sharp one in the middle, I guess the prior race. Yeah, but this one I thought was wide open.
Just to recap, 3, 5, 6, 9, 11, 12, the wide spread. For the record, I thought Our Bucky Charm, the 11, was the right one. We see this a lot with the Calbred breeding, where they seem to be equally adept on the different surfaces. Looking at those internal fractions, looks like one who might just be able to clear from out there. Love those outside posts. Not going to be an overly sexy price, but that's one I wouldn't mind pressing up a little bit for Pipey and Hernandez to close things out at Santa Anita. Seth, this was great fun. No good deed goes unpunished around here. We'll have you back real soon.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
And just one more reminder for folks, go to expressbet.com/tournaments. Look at the full schedule of feeders and qualifiers, and maybe you can hit it big like Seth did last weekend. Of course, he's going to be in it again on Monday, so, you know, it's not going to be easy. But hopefully everybody's there going to participate and have a great time. And we've got one more segment on the show, and it's coming up right now. Last but not least, very happy to bring in the usual co-host of this program. He is coming to us from his new place in New York City. We'll ask him about how that's going. He's Jonathan Kinchin. What's up, JK?
What's going on? It was pouring rain just a little while ago. Like, I'd never seen it like that. And all I thought to myself was, if I had to take the train to Aqueduct today, well, what would I do? because, I mean, I'm not going out in that. It was, I mean, it was intense. Very
it was a little
intense.
Violent. I'm going to the Stones tonight with Perrin. So I'm really hoping this weather decides to cooperate, because, you know, I've got a bunch of tailgates to go to and things, and if that nonsense is going to continue, we could get rained out. But I definitely think you want to invest in some good rain gear and an umbrella. Let's start there.
Okay. I mean, look, I can get into that.
You're from Texas. You're used to extreme weather. You working on Saturday? This is an interesting looking card at Belmont. A little bit of the calm before the storm in terms of Belmont Stakes Festival coming up, but we got some rock solid racing.
Yeah, all weekend, actually. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday.
Nice. That's right. Memorial Day and all. We get that extra stuff in. We're going to have extra coverage Monday for the Santa Anita contest. You'll have heard about that elsewhere on this show. But yeah, if you're in New York, get out to the races. Hopefully we'll have some good weather come in and say hi to JK. Just don't grab him by the arm when you see him. I saw some very rude behavior when we were down at Monmouth, JK. I felt for you.
People are wild.
Yeah, wild. I mean, most people are amazingly nice, to be fair.
No. Yeah, some people are wild. Some people are wild.
Yeah, it's those outliers who stand out. Let's start our analysis on the Saturday card with race number 7, the Pennine Ridge, mile and an eighth on the turf, grade 2 action. Who do you like in here?
Yeah, you know, for me, I think it's kind of about the top two. It's about the 2-horse Legend of Time and the 3 Risk Tolerance. I'm assuming those are the numbers. There's no entries in stakes, is there? It doesn't matter. I think there's no Klarovich. You know, Legend of Time, I thought last time in the American Turf, like, you know, I just felt like this horse kind of had dead aim in that situation. You know, I liked the trip and just really kind of spit it at the top of the stretch. These Applebee's are going to start to be a little bit overbet. People are looking for alternatives to the obvious grass kind of king of New York and Chad Brown, and they end up kind of go, oh, Appleby, that's a good angle to go a different direction. I like Risk Tolerance. Horse ran extremely well first time out. I like the way the race unfolded, sat, pounced, nice turn of foot, quicken, a word that I'll borrow from the Matisse brothers. I'm going to single Risk Tolerance to get started here and try to pick up some equity beating a likely bet horse, the 2 Legend of Time.
I'll go the opposite direction. I mean, it wasn't a great effort from Legend of Time in the American Turf back on the Derby undercard, but that was a fast pace in there. He contested it. He attacked and he ran out of gas. But this time around, I think he's going to be able to make the lead a lot more easily. Rosario, obviously one of the best when he can control things on the front end. It'll be interesting to see if a runner like a White Palomino maybe tries to go with, but I don't know. That horse just, to me, more obviously wants to sit and pounce. Maybe Legend of Time has a tactical edge and is able to do a little bit better things than he showed the other day. I certainly respect Risk Tolerance, and on bets where I can, you know, you mentioned the equity problem when you use these top two in the market, but on if there are bets where it makes sense to have some savers through your Risk Tolerance, I will probably go there. Let's move on to race number 8. We've got New York bred fillies, JK, in the allowance ranks this time around, and we've got a big full field here, so get ready. Count those numbers when we're doing this with the early PPs to try to get things ready and figure out who's who. Timeform US says this is going to be a fast pace, and that gives me a little bit of pause about a runner like Smokin' Hot Kitty. But I do believe she has a great chance to be the best of speed in this spot. And I'm definitely going to have her on some tickets. I'm still sort of formulating my final opinion, if I'm being honest, as I look through this one. Do you have any more clarity than I do in Belmont's eight?
I'm going to use the two and the three, the two Smoky Eyes, the three Stella Mars. I'll use both of those horses. I thought Stella Mars ran pretty good last time. Got a little bit of a setup, but still was close enough. Gets the blinkers, gets the Lasix. Smoky Eyes, another one who I want to make sure I have. Just has some back numbers with Christoph to make some sense. You'd like to think that Bill Mott should be able to find that form. My top choice is going to be Smoking Hot Kitty, who has been running on the dirt. And it seems to like the back-to-back wins on the dirt make me feel good because I feel like she's basically a turf horse. Kitten's Joy, she's got three siblings that have won on the grass. So her wins on the dirt maybe just suggest she's in great form right now. She's tactical, she's forward. And now getting back to the lawn, I think is going to be something she'll appreciate. So Smoking Hot Kitty will be my top choice. I'll use the two and the three as well.
Seven as an A, two and the three as a backup.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily have a problem using them equally just because I think the price on the other two should be good enough. Gotcha. But I definitely want to hit it one more time with Smoking Hot Kitty.
That'll be implied with the seven being your top pick in those notes we send around for In the Money Plus. Yeah, we're on the same page with Smoking Hot Kitty. I get Stella Mars, second off the layoff, now in the care of Mike Maker, probably supposed to improve, could be the best closer. Throw in a little bit of a vote for one that I'm hoping is going to be a long shot in here. The number 11, Artemis Girl, I'll use as a backup. Second off the layoff for Dave Donk. We always talk about the great job he does. Really didn't do any running off that break last time, but was a huge price. I think this is maybe a little bit of an easier group getting the switch to Johnny Velasquez. This is one I didn't want to beat me at a price. So 7-3 on the A line for me and the 11 on the B line in race number 8. We move to race number 9, the hinge of this pick 5, and we get to some real bread and butter stuff with this $12,000 claimer going a mile. Who do you like in here?
Yeah, these are the spots that I just feel like I always feel like I have to spread. And it's because it's just these claiming ranks, they all kind of start to look the same. I think it's a very competitive claiming group always in New York. It's just they all look very similar. I want to make sure that I have the 4, Valenzen Day, who's stretching out, who last time going the 6 furlongs, that line just looks like kind of one of those even lines that's going to appreciate the stretch out. And if you go 3 back, this horse ran extremely well in the mile at Belmont. And then some back races make sense as well. And then I'm going to lose the number here, but I also liked Cheeky Tico. 8. Another one who just 8. The kind of has some of that same look, that kind of even style around there. Was beaten 10 last time. That's why these races can be so tricky. You just never know who's going to really jump up and run. But I'm going to try to use the 4 through the 10 in some regard, right? I'm going to use the 4 and the 8 as A horses. You know, Durkin's Call, the 10, who's switching to Wayne Potts, feels like another one that's likely to be an A horse. And then Funkenstein, another one, putting the blinkers on, I'll probably try to use as an A horse. Candy Tycoon, an A horse. The rest of them I'll probably sprinkle in as Bs.
Okay, so just to recap that, and you're a little spreadier than me, but you had all my numbers. I've got you 4, 8, 10 on the top line, 5, 6, 7, and 9 on the back line, if that sounds about right. The reason I knew the number of Cheeky Tico is because I had it in my notes, because this is a horse that I like the best. I think it's going to get an absolutely perfect trip in this spot and just absolutely fits in terms of form and figures. Funkenstein, who beat Cheeky Tico last time, another one I think is going to be able to likely get an absolutely perfect trip, has the right blend of speed and stamina, I think, to get the job done for Jacobson. And then you mentioned Durkin's Call, another one. Potts, I said this earlier in the show when we were talking about Monmouth races. Potts is one of these trainers I have trouble with. You know, I seem to zig when he zags and vice versa. But this is a horse who I'm hoping is going to be, I don't know, maybe isn't going to be a decent price. Maybe he's going to be one of the favorites. It's not a horse I want to lose to and makes enough sense that I'm definitely going to have some Durkin's Call on my tickets, probably a little bit more as a backup. That's the 10 runner. And then I like Cheeky Tico, the 8, along with Funkenstein, the 6, as we move on to our 10th race on the card on Saturday at Belmont. We go back to the turf for these New York breds. Let's get this rain over with so we stay on the turf.
in this spot, and another race that appears to have a fairly rock solid pace, but given also that it's a turf sprint, I don't want to rule out the possibility of a horse that's going to be, you know, on or near the lead doing well in this spot. I was taking a long look at Big Prankster, another one of these second time off the layoff horses. This horse did not show speed off the break, which surprised me, but has shown speed in the past. I think should be able to get a good forward sit, if not on the lead. I think has the opportunity to be in touch, and one that I'm hoping is going to improve second off the layoff. It's a funny running line because there's sort of a buried middle move in there. I think this horse is going to improve, was bet off the layoff. Big Prankster is my top pick. I'm reserving the right to throw some others in there in this 10th race at Belmont. What did you come up with in this one?
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted Power Attack the 3, so I'll use Power Attack as an A-type. And there's a couple of others in here that I want to make sure I include as A's and then some B's as well. The one Allied Attack puts the blinkers on. Didn't run great last time. Like, I didn't love that performance. But this horse in the two starts before that has shown a ton of speed. And my hope is that maybe from the inside, IRAD will be a little bit more forward with Allied Attack, the blinkers on, and then I'm actually going to get the performance out of Allied Attack that I've kind of always, not always, but the last two looked like you might have got on the dirt, now gets on the grass again here. I think that one's interesting. So the one and the three is A horses. I was going to use the 4 Big Prankster as a B horse. Just doesn't have a, you know, it doesn't have a ton of early speed. I don't know, made the lead a couple races back, but, you know, really popped away from there. It's the only reason I feel like that horse went to the front. It wasn't necessarily like a natural speed thing. It's almost like they just like got out of their a taste early. And then the last one I wanted to use, this number thing always gets me, Russi, the looking at Lucky Gelding. Towards the outside, exits that same race as the one horse does, where Icy Flavor was in there. Second off of a layoff, maybe take another step forward with Javier, kind of drawn towards the outside. Is tactical enough, can stay connected, but they go too quick, like Timeform US suggests they might. I think this one could pick up the pieces.
Roosie's the 11, and that was another I had on my list to include in this spot, along with the number 10, P Money. Requires a little bit of imagination. P Money, I think, but I think this horse has a chance to improve with a different kind of trip. Was handled pretty easily by Power Attack. I was sort of looking for them to sit mid-pack and maybe make one run. Has some decent closing sectionals at time. Klosaurus, sort of an under-the-radar barn that I think can do well in these spots. 4, 10, 11 for me, for JK. 3 and 1 on the top line. 4 and 11 on the B line. We close with what a classic nightcap this time of year in New York. New York bred, maiden claiming 40s, going a mile and a 16th. These races, once in a while, a horse will leap out at me, and I'll try to single and pick up some equity. And then other times, I just have no idea and spread. I might try a combination of those two approaches in this spot. The horse that I like a lot, I don't know what kind of, I mean, he's going to be bet, but I'm hoping is a bettable favorite. I thought Jay Hirsch in for the tag for the first time just makes all the sense in the world on this class drop, getting back to New York. Didn't do much running in New York last year, but that was against maiden special weights. Has been gelded since. Looks to be rounding into form. Do you think Jay Hirsch is one who can be trusted in here? Do you have another horse you can trust, or is this more of a spread for your life type of a race?
Not funny. That was a single A for me as well. I think when you're looking at these and it's, and look, we see these everywhere in New York, you know, even when we're upstate in the summer, they always seem to end with these maiden 40s, whether it be state breds or open company. To me, you get very skinny here, or you basically need all of them because they've all kind of proven to be what they are. And who knows if one's going to take to the grass, or who knows if someone's being cheeky on the drop, or you never know. And so for me, it's either like I look at these races like single or spread, and I'm going to single with Jay Hirsch as well. This horse has run basically the last three times in open company down at Gulfstream during February and March. Ran okay numbers, but didn't necessarily get as close as you'd like in terms, you know, got third beaten 7, 6 beaten 3, fourth beaten six. So it's just kind of always right there in the mix. And I think the class relief, getting the New York breads, not that the New York bread situation is that drastic as it used to be. I mean, I think that these New York breads can compete still in open company,
yeah,
but it definitely is a drop. So that's all I need. You get Manny Franco, you get one of the best riders in New York, you get Graham Motion, just being realistic, it feels like, with a horse that just probably doesn't want to get the job done in an open company versus protected maiden special weights. I'm going to go with Jay Hirsch as a single as well.
One other I'll mention, just as a sort of a lone B type, I think the way after hearing your confidence in Jay Hirsch, I'm thinking of playing this, the 11 Frozen Four, not just a college hockey hunch play, go Terriers, but we got one dropping in, gelded for the first time, few better than Clement at getting them ready to roll. He's also very realistic when it comes to spotting them. This is a horse that I think will be moving very well late, and I'd want on some tickets. Rosario seems to be cycling up in his riding as well, and I think he could time a move right. First Lasix, yet another angle on Frozen Four. So mostly five, a tiny bit of 11. JK looking to get out with the five, and that's all the time we have, JK. That's going to do it for this edition of the show. Appreciate you coming on.
No problem. Talk soon.
Thanks to JK. Thanks to all the guests on today's show. Thanks to our founding partners, 10 Strike Racing, our charity partners, Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga, that embrace the Belmont event during Belmont Week Wednesday night. I'm going to have a pretty link up soon. Might even be in the notes for this show. Come and join us there. Support a great cause. Therapeutic Horses of Saratoga. Learn more in themoneypodcast.com/horses. Thanks, though, most of all, to all of you for listening, for watching our YouTube channel, and making this all so much fun to do. We're going to be back very soon. I'm Peter Thomas for Natal. May you win all your photos.